This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given on the 25th of October, 1955. The title of this lecture is The Handling of Confusion in the Preclear or on Any Dynamic. This lecture is 61 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
All right. We have a lecture now on the 25th of October, 1955, second morning lecture, concerning the handling of confusion in the preclear or on any dynamic. I don't want to start out at once when I say any dynamic by inferring that you could confuse God. I don't want to start out on that particular level, but it's a very handy one to start out on. Since the whole subject of God is a very fine subject in which to exemplify this. Now, I've already spoken to you concerning upsetting the stable data and thereby avalanching in the confusion of healers. It is really not fair to take a man who is sincerely devoted to helping his fellow man and victimizing him one way or the other by kicking out his basic data. You can actually put him into such a situation, you see, that he no longer dares quite trust his old material, and he certainly can't trust yours. And right in that in-between right there is the reason why occasionally somebody will come from, let us say, chiropractic and be trained as an auditor. And in being trained, his own stable data is unsettled, and he, to some degree, stops being a chiropractor, but also he fails to become, to any great degree, a Scientologist. The man is left in between in confusion because the data on which he is aligned has not been augmented by you. It has been invalidated. Now let us take somebody, pattern of a, how do you make a squirrel? This is one of the more important things that we face, because every once in a while we have a squirrel. What is a squirrel, people say? A squirrel is looking for somebody who is nutty enough to be processed by him. A squirrel is a very specific anatomy. It is very interesting. It is an individual who has sought to achieve in Dianetics or Scientology a stability of an alignment of data, which is there to be achieved. And having begun on that line, he is fairly successful up to the point when someone nearest and dearest to him starts to kick out from underneath him the new stable data which he has assumed and on which he is now aligning his existence. Follow me? We have then a situation here where an individual's stable data has been invalidated and unstabilized by someone very close to him. I can almost tell you exactly who is going to squirrel where. Predict it now. It will be some chap or some girl whose wife or husband, as the case may be, is violently opposed to the subject. And that fellow or girl who is very sincerely interested in Dianetics and Scientology will be under a continual bombardment of data, you see? And this bombardment will invalidate the stable data of Dianetics and Scientology, and this person will not know where to turn or to what to attribute this confusion, and will, when they become a squirrel, simply turn on the organization and find all sorts of things wrong with auditors and me and so forth. In other words, they'll turn the confusion on us, and they will sit down in Oklahoma or Kattegat or someplace and keep knocking themselves out on this basis. The material which they print is confused. It is not factual. It is very, very confused. Now, in any human organization, it is almost impossible to look around it without finding a great number of imperfections. One can find a great number of imperfections. One can also find a great number of hopeful facts and a great number of assets. And these people do nothing but look at these imperfections. What are they really looking for? They're trying to completely unstabilize the data of Dianetics and Scientology, do you see? If they could completely unstabilize it, then they themselves would be in a situation of mental stability and calm, they feel, you see. You get the idea. Now, a drunkard, and this is important to you in processing, by the way, it's not just a random fact thrown in, is actually trying to do this. By test, he's trying to do this. He's trying to get a full glass in front of him. He knows he felt all right before he drank it. And so the answer to drunkenness is a full glass of liquor. It's very odd. So they have another drink and another drink, and this is compulsive drinking. They've got to get a full glass of liquor in front of them. Then that they drink it seems to escape their attention. And if they could just get that full glass of liquor in front of them, they'll feel all right. This works up in mock-ups. You can do this by creative processes. You can take an alcoholic and you would make him mock up a full glass of liquor, make him mock up a full glass of liquor, and it'll start doing all sorts of automatic and interesting things. Of course, you would then make him mock up full glasses of liquor and make him drink them. He will go through all the symptoms of drunkenness, giddiness, compulsion, obsession. He finally gets to a point where all he has to do is mock up a full glass of liquor, and it can sit there in front of him, or he can move it to the left or right, or back and forth, or drink it, and so on. An auditor in mock-up form can actually make him put the flavor of the alcohol and its kick and expectancies and all the rest of it into the alcohol. You can do a very tricky job of it, but the point is, you've got to get him to where he can sit there with a full glass of liquor in front of him without either feeling all right or all wrong, you see. What's wrong with him, basically, he will tell you. He's trying to get a full glass of liquor in front of him because he felt all right before he got that glass. Now, similarly, the squirrel knows he was all right until he drank this horrible, unstabilizing confusion, Dianetics and Scientology. See? And if he could just get rid of it and put it over there, invalidate it completely, he'd be all right. But he's in the uncomfortable position of already having a conviction upon its truth and having had these convictions thoroughly invalidated for him. So his solution, there are many solutions. One is simply to leave the whole thing and go join the French Foreign Legion or something. But one of the solutions which troubles the organization is that they think then if they can unmock everything connected with it, everything connected with the subject, the organization, so forth, by fair means or foul, they will then be rid of this confusion, which is unbearable to them. Now, almost all of these people have an intolerance for confusion, which is fabulous. It's way up in the stars. And their level of criticism is very high. All right, now let's look at that mechanism. The axiom there, a stable datum, is necessary to the alignment of data. Well, that's fine after the individual has a confusion all aligned. You see, here's an awful lot of data that's in confusion. Stable datum, he gets it all aligned, very nicely aligned. Then somebody starts knocking and kicking at his stable datum. You see, and he gets the confusion back again. And he didn't like the confusion. Now he knows that it's a confusion, and in that is a tremendous clue to this whole picture. He now knows it better. He cannot not know it, you see. His effort to not know is to not is everything connected with the subject. All right, now let's look at this further. Let's look at your preclear, and let's discover that he could be swamped about the stable data of his life, unless he is permitted as permissively as possible to rearrange that stable data. And if you permit him to arrange this stable data neatly and nicely and squared away, why, he will be then in pretty good shape. But if you are to take engrams and locks and secondaries and past lives and all the rest of it and dump on his head, and you can, you know, oh man, the obedience of some of the mental mechanisms to the auditor is something we have really never discussed. But this thing called the somatic strip is really there, and it goes to the exact point and space in time and space where the auditor tells it to, and it starts going through anything the auditor tells it to. He starts it going through some kind of an operation, it'll go through with the operation. Fabulous. You can hold a stopwatch on the thing. This is some terrifically powerful phenomena you have here. One time I had a medical doctor say, well, now, I took a patient and I put him through a tonsillectomy. And medical doctor was holding a watch on the thing. And we just let the patient go through the tonsillectomy. Just the strip just went through the tonsillectomy, that's all. I just told it to go through, and it did, see? And the fellow went through all of the dramatizations of the whole tonsillectomy, see? The medical doctor sitting there holding a watch on, and he said, well, he said, that was a fairly good throat surgeon. He said he did that in 19 minutes, and that was just about right, and so forth, and then realized what he'd said. The fellow was so taken up with the situation, he didn't realize that something fantastic was occurring here. There was a time machine of some sort or another which was going on at the command of another person, which was putting somebody through a tonsillectomy from beginning to end. There's a tremendous number of this phenomena. We neglect it, we don't bother to teach it, because it's all proof or conviction phenomena. All right, your somatic strips now can come up out of your tonsillectomy to present time. Now... Here then is where an auditor is armed with information of such accuracy and information about things that are of such a broadly influencing nature that a preclear or a person is very much putty in his hands, to coin a cliche. Wherever we look, then, an ability on the part of the auditor to upset the stable data of the preclear and land him in confusion. Preclear thinks life is built this way or that way. He has subscribed to some superstition or another, and may probably to subscribe to this many times, you see, various things through his various careers and so on. He's got a lot of stable data, and all of a sudden we just upset this stable data to him by overpowering him with evidence, which we drag out of his own bank, and which he cannot thereafter do anything but believe. Crush. You see what you could do? You know, crush. Well, actually, we do this slightly. We give him some reality on Scientology. The best reality to get on Scientology, though, is that it will enforce one's stable data or will supplant one's stable data with better stable data. See, that's the best reality that one can get on the subject. All right, let's take this dynamic of the Supreme Being. That's an interesting one to investigate from this standpoint. And we discover that it is totally a structure of stable data. It is the one structure which is not really represented in any way, shape, or form with mass, except, of course, as we consider church's mass and priesthood's mass and so on. And that's actually a third dynamic mass. We're talking about the eighth dynamic now, pure and simple. And this thing is totally supported by data. And it tells you, first and foremost, and at once, that you had better seize upon a stable datum, folks. You better just get hold of that stable datum. God is, and you gotta have faith in him. And if you don't, we're gonna burn you, fry you, condemn you, and do other religious and spiritual things to you. Now, that's the way one of those things keep going. And, here is a structure of data totally supported by a faith, an exterior faith, one that the individual must be always coached on. He must be delicately handled with regard to this faith. At no time can we take our finger off this fellow and let him wander off into any speculation. Well, now, in early stages, a religion is relatively successful because a bunch of fellows get around and they say, let's have a bunch of faith in this thing. And we've heard something or other, and we've seen something or other, and we think that this is fine. And now let's all get together and let's have some faith in this. And we'll all agree that this is a nice, interesting thing, that God is, and that we have faith in him, and he will help us out. Now, evidently, Thetans originally on this were mocking up a group spirit, you see, of some kind or another. They're saying, well, now we're all together in this, and we'll mock up this thing, and when any of us gets in trouble, why, this thing will go into action, and we'll be all set. Well, that's all very well, and is perfectly workable and usable. Now, in its early stages, a religion comes along the line neatly and nicely, does well, does smoothly, because it is subscribed to, without force, duress, proof, or conviction. Then they start manufacturing the relics. The relic factories start turning up to High C, and the bones of a martyr or the clubs of Hercules or something like that start coming out in an unending line from some very faithful follower of the faith for a couple of quick drachmas. And now we're getting conviction. People start coming up with proofs. Why? Because people who have no part in the original agreement, or have not really subscribed to it later, but have gone into it for social reasons or something of the sort, are there, and people suddenly awaken to this horrible thing, heresy, of some sort or another, disbelief, faithlessness, sin, all these things start cropping up. And what do they mean? They mean this individual hasn't subscribed to our stable datum. Nowhere do we find he is right there with our stable datum. So if we haven't a stable datum in common with this man, then he's got to be held in line. So we tell him he better have faith or else. He doesn't now have an understanding of this thing, does he? He has no understanding of it. He merely knows that the rest of the group are saying their prayers in a certain cadence before a certain altar, and they're supposed to go through this. You see? And this group demands this of him. But he hasn't seen the light or anything of the sort, and he sort of goes along with it. He's trying to operate in the field of religion without a stable datum. And what's very strange is religion is thereafter a complete confusion to him. Do you follow that clearly? See that? No stable datum to begin with. He's simply there because good roads, good weather, the rest of the folks go down there too, you know. And he hasn't had any revelations or something of the sort. No proofs have ever dumped on his head. He didn't ever wake up in the middle of the night and find Isis bending over his cot. You know, he didn't ever do this. He stayed awake a couple nights, find out she would, and he decides, oh, well, heck. I haven't got any engrams in that string, so I won't see any visions. I mean, it's, you know, well, it's all right, but I don't understand what these people, and there we go, see. I don't understand this, I don't understand that. Confusion. After a while, somebody has to come along and manufacture relics. Somebody has to come along and put people up on pedestals and say, now, this person had a vision last night. In order to hold the faith together. Let me assure you that if they have to hold the faith together, there's no faith. Now, we have on the eighth dynamic the most artificial stable datum we could assume. See, it's an artificial stable datum. It is generally, early on track, arrived at by a bunch of thetans who say, now, our thought powers are going to help each other out if we ever get into that, and this kind of makes a deity of our group. And this is the deity of our group. After a while, somebody gets dissatisfied with this, so they pour him into brass, you know, and set him up and say, now that's the deity of our group. So they've lost the idea. Now we've got to have force, duress, proof, conviction, you see? And no, there's no religion there. And all of a sudden, well, you have huge edifices all over the place. You have temples on the hill and in the valley in ruins. Edifices all over the place with the roofs caved in, or somebody stabling cows in them. That's the faith of religion. And that faith going to pot brings about a rather inevitable fate. It's happened time after time after time. I mean, this is not new phenomena amongst man. This is the most old, moth-eaten phenomenon you ever cared to look at. Ever down in Athens, run a preclear sometime or something of the sort, and you haven't got anything better to do, sit on top of the Acropolis. The amount of ruin discernible from there is considerable. And yet those gods were once not people in temples. Those gods were either actual thetans that came in and ran a game, or those gods were a group spirit that these people just got together and mocked up, you know, and said this exists, and because they had faith in each other, then it would take care of them. Those gods had, you might say, as much as any structure ever had, They had life and breath. It was a live, real, vibrant thing. And after a while, somebody came along and they built an image to reinforce it in a big temple to make it real. And they started getting small girls and putting them up before the congregation that had a vision last night. And, you know, here we go. It's an interesting game, but it doesn't have anything to do with the eighth dynamic. See, it's how can we keep this faith enforced, and the end of it is confusion, and the end of the confusion is a shattered temple. Now, here is the cycle of religion, inevitable. But it needn't be inevitable. You're in possession of material, which removes it from the field of the inevitable. Let's look over this. We're dealing with a body of data. It does align. It is aligned. How can the person align it with his existence? You have a sane transition. The oddity of the data which you have, and which you give a preclear, and which you give groups, and the public at large, is that it aligns with their experience, because the data is a body of data, not speculative, but most of it, very concrete, and therefore, you'll find it aligns very smoothly, if you permit it to. Now, your action in running an engram on a preclear just to show him is the same action as putting a mass in the temple to show people that God does exist. See, proof, conviction, one way or the other. An individual would be a pretty stupid individual if he couldn't conceive out of the materials and the truths which you have, and by the way, they're simply truths because they are agreed upon and they're here in this universe. They already exist. We're rich by the accumulation of 76 trillion years worth of agreement, evidently. And if people can't see these things and align them with their own life, then they're stupid. All right, so they're stupid. You think there's something else on the end of that. It's like that song the Marines sing, Be Kind to Your Web-Footed Friends. You may think this song has no end, and you're right. It ends on a complete offbeat, drives people mad. There's no end of cycle there. Well, there's no end of cycle of this either. That's the way it is. It just hangs in midair. Now, it's an oddity. It's a great oddity that man has a tendency to try too hard. And when he's trying too hard on one fixed point, he then doesn't see any other points and he becomes stupid. See, he loses all other points, you might say. He gets an unknownness of existence or position of too many objects and subjects and thoughts. And he's very fixed on one point, you see. And here's all these unknowns out there. And you pick his attention up and put him on one of those unknowns, the whole thing's liable to collapse on him because he is a spark, a minute spark of livingness, totally bounded by unknowns. That could be a definition of man. And the only thing that is not unknown to him, perhaps, is one small sphere of activity. Tiny, you see. Small, and into this he has interwoven his agreements. Now he has his attention squarely on that spot, and he doesn't know, amongst his other unknownnesses, that there are any unknowns around to plague or bother him until you unfix his attention and the unknowns start to hit him. Well, processing an individual too fast with the processes you were using today, force, duress, one any kind or another, trying to force him through, running him on upper levels and that sort of thing, will drop too many unknowns on him and he gets confused. If you start to pull stable data out from underneath him, he gets confused. See, if we try to invalidate or evaluate for him, we are unwittingly, almost always, knocking against and upsetting some stable datum. Now, a stable datum can be very, very aberrated. It'd be something with which you would have the most impatience imaginable. Some fellow comes along and he tells you all automobiles eat hay. And you say, wait a minute. You think all automobiles eat hay? And he says, yeah. He says, I know. They all eat hay. You say, they do not. Come here. And you open up the gas tank and let him smell the gasoline and show him that it goes into the carburetor and it goes there and the guy spins. He may be holding a complete automobile accident at bay with this outrageous datum. Now, little kids are more prone to have data like this than grown people. Grown people have been slugged into line. Little kid's liable to come up to you and tell you something fantastic. He's just trying to align data any way he sees fit. His attention isn't fixed on anything, so it doesn't particularly matter how he aligns data. It isn't a life or death make or break proposition how he aligns this data. So in childhood, we get all sorts of misalignments of data, which is the thing that attracted the attention of Freud to the childhood period of life. He found that there was more randomness in that and more aberrated ideas in that area than any other area, and he foolishly died for the aberrated idea in an effort to correct it and so correct the rest of the fellow's life. It isn't the aberrated idea, and it isn't the idea at all that brings us into a condition of stupidity, confusion, dizziness, somatics, and so forth. It is not the stable datum. That's what you've got to learn about religion. See? Religion has the most outrageous stable data you ever heard of. Just, we're talking about religion so we can talk about the freakler, see? Has the most outrageous stable data you ever heard of. Let's take one well-known faith, with which I am very friendly, by the way. I feel very friendly toward this faith. Nevertheless, it has unfortunately propounded these as stable data. God is all. God is good. Man is evil. Think it over. If man is evil, is man part of all? Yes. Is man part of God? Well, yes. God is good. Is God totally good? Yes. Is man evil? Yes. Is the. See, it doesn't equate. We're asked to violate our logic on this thing. Man couldn't possibly be evil and be part of a good God, see? Or, if man is so evil and man is part of God, then God can't be too good either. We must have some sense in this. And yet this religion goes along very happily and builds huge edifices and does all sorts of things and has more hope than success, but why not? It actually arranges a bunch of stable data. Now, the horrible thing about this particular religion, by the way, is that every now and then people spin in it. They spin suddenly. Rather extravagantly sometimes. Why did they spin? Well, it isn't the stable data that spun them. They didn't get into the religion in the first place for any other reason than to try to get some stable data. What they were running from was confusion and stupidity. They were running from brutality. They were running to the use of force, to the enslavement of man. They were backing up from a society which believed the only way to make an honest man was to make a half-dead one, which didn't work. And these people protested against that, and they fall back into this sphere, which is unstably based on the stable data I have just enumerated to you. You can heal a man if you make him think right thoughts, and so forth. All right. Don't look at the stable data as the center of the trouble. Look, it's at least stable data. And if you can just get that thought clearly about your free clear, you will understand him yourself very much better. He's crazy as hell. He believes that uranium is mined in church belfries. He believes that the way children are born is you find them in watermelons. And he will argue with you at great length and with terrible force and furor and conviction to try to demonstrate to you these terrible truths about uranium, and you did away with churches, you wouldn't have an atom bomb, and therefore we could avoid the atomic war, you see, because there wouldn't be any more church belfries to find any uranium in. And, you know, boy, you say to yourself, holy cats, this fellow is strictly fruitcake. Now, the stable data, aberrated condition of, simply tells you how much confusion this fellow is having to breast. He doesn't have the leisure, he can't take a breath without having such enormous confusions and stupidities and unponderables and unknowns cave in upon him that he himself would be swamped. And so he picks up any straw with which to dam that roaring flood. You see? Now, if we're going to understand the pre-clear at all, we must understand the idea that confusions and unknownnesses in that person's existence have caused him to seize upon certain data which, aberrated, right or wrong, is nevertheless some straw mat in the dike. And you, as an auditor, actually have the power to pull the straw out of the dike with the greatest of ease. All you've got to do is say to this fellow, uranium, belfries, come on. You know your engrams. You can run him on all this and that and the other thing. You just say, come on. Come on up here in the church belfry. Let's take a look around. He's all set. The uranium's not there. Get the idea? The guy, zzz, zzz. Now all of a sudden he looks stupid. He looks confused. Now the funny part of it is that an individual can be told about locks and experience, and that his past experience can influence his present day conduct or behavior. He'll tell you this too. He'll say, yes, I know. And you add this little datum. You say, well, they're contained in pictures. He'll say, no kidding. What pictures? Well, do you have pictures? Well, now you don't have to lower the boom on him. You can usually elicit his interest to this degree because he's cognited to some slight degree right on that fact. Yes, that's how these damned experiences are riding along with him. See? Wham! And it gives him a little better stability, which is quite curious. Then, of course, as he goes further into it, if he finds the actual tremendous power and duress that these pictures can exert out of a reactive mind, he's liable to spin again. Why was he interested? He was interested because he knew he was being subjected to a confusion of one kind or another, and this confusion was harming him, was making him less able to survive. He knew this confusion was, and now he seized upon the engram, not really as a source, but as a new stable datum, and he's starting to align things on this new stable datum. Now we ask him to give up these beloved, precious engrams. He's aligned a body of logic on this subject, see? Now we say, run the engram. Okay, he's perfectly willing to do that. We actually can change him. We can change his psychosomatics and everything else. When we ask him to give up, this very, very confused person, the entirety of his picture storage, he's going to regard this with grave suspicion. He wants the picture to prove to him that the reason he's acting the way he's acting is because he has a picture of the way he acted. You understand then how this can be a boomerang? Huh? How this could backfire? That's why we always have to give the individual his picture back after we make him get rid of it. What we do is give him power of choice over whether he has or has not the picture and let him have the picture. You get it? He still has the mechanism. He can still prove it to himself. He feels he can carry this thing around and show it to somebody else, which he can't. He doesn't mock him up that thick. Unfortunate, but he feels he can carry this thing around and do things with it. It's an explanation to him. This tells him he wasn't to blame. This tells him he wasn't responsible. The second that we got up on the basis of telling everybody they were responsible for everything that had ever happened, the popularity of Dianetics went zoom. See? As long as we told everybody that they weren't responsible for anything that had ever happened, they were happy about the whole thing. They said, it's these pictures. We'd given them a point of blame, see? And they were perfectly cheerful about this. But here is an item. This individual knows its pictures. He knows these pictures are reactivating behavior and so on. He knows these pictures have causation. And the pictures themselves are woven into the body of stable data which he has and have stabilized far, far more data than was stabilized with him before. Now, if we made him give this up, we knocked this out, which we could do merely by invalidating it, not by proving it wasn't true. We could just keep hammering on it, you know, and making him queasy about the whole thing. And he says, well, it wasn't pictures and that sort of thing. It's something else. Well, he would then have a tendency to be as spinny as before, see, if we really invalidated him, because we've cut loose an awful lot of confusion on this person. Now, when Dianetics stepped across to Scientology, it was absolutely necessary that we change the name of the subject. You say, well, good heavens, that really wasn't necessary because it was an outgrowth of the same thing. No, it wasn't. We changed position. We changed position. We said, that's picture. And this is the whole body of stable data on the subject of pictures themselves. And this tremendous body of stable data is right there, and it's observable, and it's valuable, and you can use it. And the basic datum is dynamic principle of existence is survive, and the picture tells you survival and non-survival patterns. And you've got them, and they're all over the place, and they're very interesting, and you can run them out, and they're causative, and you can do this, and you can do that with them. You can throw them into and out of restimulation with the greatest of ease. In other words, it was an entire rationale, you see. Now we started talking about the thing that looks at the pictures. Pictures are all very well, but there's a thing that looks at the pictures. And a lot of guys said, no. See? You were asking them to some slight degree to look at themselves or look at the state other people were in. And we said something else was wrong now. We didn't say it was totally pictures. We said something else was wrong. We elucidated a greater truth. We said it was the tolerance of this awareness of awareness unit which was at fault. The tolerance or intolerance of it. In other words, the way it thought was the way it lived. It could change its mind. And it could change its mind about pictures. It could change its mind about anything. These are actually two different subjects and two different bodies of aligned data. You see that clearly. One is a mechanical look. It's a mechanical, mechanistic explanation. Very valuable. No less true. Demonstrable phenomena. So true, in fact, that you can always back up the engram on the preclear. You have in your possession weapons for conviction of such force and magnitude that the priesthood of Egypt would have regarded you as some awe. The Asclepian temple in early Greek times, or Middle Greek times, had another mechanism which survives today in one of the superstitions of the mental world. And that's the dream. They knew the mechanism of the dream, and they could turn a dream on and they could turn a dream off. And they could throw a guy under duress by smoke or drugs. They could put him down on a couch, slip him a Mickey, and then a priest would stand alongside of him while he was in an hypnotic trance and tell him what to dream and what not to dream, as the case may be. And he would come out of it, and he'd had quite an experience. And I think any one of you dragged into an Asclepian temple and given this experience would have come out of there saying, well, my God, it might have been simply an hypnotic trance, but brother, it was real. Now, here's demonstrable phenomena, but it was unfortunately phenomena which didn't easily lend itself to an alignment with life itself. It aligned itself with superstition. It aligned itself with further stupidity. You had given the fellow an unknownness now, a further unknownness, and he already had too many. And the people used to stumble out of those Asclepian temples just like they stumble away from electric shock machines, saying, "There." Well, I guess I better pay my dues or report back or do something. See? We had a control mechanism because we'd added further unknownness to the case. But nevertheless, they had phenomena, and that phenomena was usable. And very often, I do not doubt for a moment, it was used as near and as far as they could use it to benefit the patient. See, I don't doubt this for a moment. Also, occasionally, they used it, I know this for a fact, to put some prince under the total duress of the Asclepian temple. Now, you yourselves have more powerful phenomena than this one without really backing up the unknownness, which you could take engrams and flip them one right after the other through the preclear's cognition, and he'd wind up spinning faster than anybody you ever heard. You could take the accumulated spin of the last 20 years and throw it into action. You talk about producing unknownness, you could produce unconsciousness this way. It's just something we don't do, but we would not mishandle or misuse this data, you see. It would be a misuse of the data both ways, from the middle. It would be a misuse of it because it would backfire, amongst other things, if we have to have a punishment involved in it. But it just wouldn't get us anyplace. So we'd have a lot of slaves. You know, you look out at this world today, you find out there's enough slaves around. All right. Now, therefore, here you have two bodies of stable data. One is the body of picture systems, overt acts, motivators, black and white phenomena. Here's a tremendous category of over the years that's been turned out. And all of this is a field of stable data, and it's based upon this fact that stimulus-response mechanisms work. And anybody, to some degree, is a stimulus-response machine. Well, however, that stable data has an unknown in its midst. And the unknown is this. Why does one person react more severely than another to the same series of engrams? That's an unknown. See, that's an instable data. That's a very imponderable thing if you start thinking it over. You know, we take Joe and we take Bill, and Joe and Bill quantitatively have about the same number of engrams. But Joe is jumping like he's been shot to the tiniest lock and rolling up in a ball. You simply send his somatic strip to the first engram in the prenatal bank and he rolls up in a ball. Zip. And Bill, you take him back to a half a dozen AAs and all kinds of things, and he says, ho-hum, he says, this is cute, this is interesting, look at these things. Here's a tremendous difference amongst people, a wild variable. What is the reaction of the individual to the picture? Well, let's find then the individual, and let's find out why he is different, one person to another person, and let's see if by adjusting this factor, we then do not make it absolutely necessary to run the pictures. Now, we haven't said the pictures didn't exist, or their stimulus response mechanisms weren't there, or that word structures and that sort of things weren't responsible for a tremendous amount of aberration. But we have said that there is a variable here, too. And we've said, who is looking at the pictures? And now we get a brand new body of phenomena, all of which stems from consideration as its top echelon and concerns the idea that a thetan is an observer, the observer of these pictures, and it goes further than that, and we find out the considerations and ability of the thing to exteriorize and so on is all. Well, you see, this is another body of data. We say then life consists of a static, and we go on and describe this static. And amongst the capabilities of this static is the ability to make pictures. We study this a little bit further, and we find then that in this other body of information, where we're treating the awareness of awareness unit, the thetan, and remember the awareness of awareness unit was present in Dianetics. We just didn't think about it very much and talk about it. This awareness of awareness unit is capable of changing its mind. And by changing its mind, it changes all its various other characteristics. It's fantastic, the number of things that can be changed by changing a thetan's mind. But remember, it's another body of data. Another body of data, totally independent of the other. It has a couple of top echelon phenomena. And I talked to you about those yesterday when I talked to you about classes. The first class, the second class, the third class, and the Xth class. See? All right. If this is a body of data, it certainly must have certain alignments. But good heavens, This thing is in alignment with every human being that walks. This is the human being. This is the guy. The guy is not a collection of pictures. That is the form the guy is wearing at the moment. This Thetan is the guy. He thinks, he talks. He loves, he hates. This is all being done by the Thetan. And he obeys the pictures to the degree that he is tolerant or intolerant of stupidity or confusion, both of which we relate. He's either tolerant of stupidity and confusion, or he's intolerant of them. If he's intolerant of them, if he's made up his mind in the direction that he's intolerant of these two things, why then, what an awful time he has. Because he starts fighting them. And finally, he says, to bring order to this chaos, I have to have a stable datum. Chaos. A couple of newspapers blowing down the street. And at this instant, he sees these two newspapers blowing down the street, and he realizes that he's got to stop one, at least. He's got to bring some order to that chaos. See? Now, he may bring order to the chaos by simply not looking at it. But he's got to bring some order to that chaos. Another fellow goes out, sees a half a hundred loose newspapers blowing in whirlwinds all over the street, and says, my, what a nice March day. See? Now, what's the difference between these two fellows? Is there any structural difference? No, there is no structural difference. One has his mind made up along the line that he cannot tolerate much confusion. And the other has his mind made up that confusion is, well, four or five universes being beat up in a concrete mixer. That would be confusing to him, you see. Now, why does one depart from one state of mind to another state of mind? And one departs, by the way, rather difficultly. It's not an easy thing, really, to take some fellow, I mean, it's not first glance, a very easy thing, take some fellow who is intolerant of two newspapers and change him into a fellow who is hardly noticing 50 or 100. See? It's not an easy thing to do. It's because he has certain vested interests in a game, and he feels that if he maintains his agreements just right, he will continue to have a game. And he has certain agreements, and if he follows these things out, he will go on with a game. And so the fellow who is intolerant of two newspapers feels that his game is intolerant of two newspapers. And his vested interest tells him that he must have this level of intolerance in order to set a good example to others, in order to get a job done, in order to put the spurs to himself. He's got it all worked out, you see. And the other fellow says that his serenity and calm and hui attitude toward existence and so on is just what he needs in order to keep his game running. So we have the whole thing adjusted back to something very like pictures, or at least forms. We have the whole thing adjusted back to forms. In other words, what's the game? So we have several considerations that could change. Unless we change several of these considerations, not by duress, but by letting the fellow look around and realign himself with existence, why, we don't get much change in the preclear. Now, I've told you just then what you do. You realign oneself with existence. Now, he's got a tremendous number of stable data, this Thetan has, in the game. See? And therefore, he has a lot of confusions nailed down. Even this fellow who was looking at a tremendous number of newspapers swirling around in the street and doesn't consider it a confusion, nevertheless has a lot of stable data. And these stable data, each one, is anchoring down and aligning a considerable body of data. This fellow's competence to a very marked degree will probably depend upon his ability to use certain faculties and capabilities. And the other fellow is adjusted in another way. And his stable data must be differently aligned somehow, or improperly aligned. Now, neither one has been subjected to more confusion or stupidity than the other. See, you got to get that clearly, that we're talking clear out of the sphere of environmental difference. We left that when we left pictures. But we do have areas of knowingness in favor of keeping a game going, and the individual reacts to these confusions to the degree that the data in them, he believes, is or is not aligned. So you see how the Thetan himself is a rather delicate thing. As far as he says there are areas of knowledge. I must have a game, and in order to keep this game, I have to stay in certain agreements, and the agreements with which I am connected at this time and in this place depend on certain stable data, and I've got this confusion sort of lined up and squared away, and there it is. And therefore, he is careful before he changes his mind, because he might change his whole game, and he might lose the whole game. He knows how easy it is for him to simply change his mind that he isn't there or something of the sort, and off he goes. See, swish. He's gone. He's lost his game. So he thinks this might happen. So he's very careful about how he changes his mind regarding certain basic definite principles. And these basic definite principles may be automobiles burn hay. But he'll have to keep this up, you see, as a pretense or as a game. And you come along as an auditor, and you say, all right, now all this fella has to do is change his mind. Click. Oh, if the fella had no game at all, listen, this would be the easiest thing in the world. This would be so easy. You'd simply say, now, get the idea you can't have a game. Get the idea you can have a game. Get the idea you can't have a game. Now, get the idea you should invent a game. The fella would say, okay. All right, what kind of a game shall we invent? Well, he says, let's invent the game of throw out a whole bunch of confusion and then unconfuse it. Problems and solutions. All right, we'll say we don't know something. And then we will go ahead and play at the game of finding it out. Get the systems he employs in order to create a game. Now you start cracking these systems up, and he will object to your cracking them up too fast, and he will slow you down in your progress. Unless he himself has this, that he can still keep a foot in the game and still keep the confusions he faces as is. So you can change his stable data actually only to the degree that you don't swamp him with the confusions, because he's going to stay in the game. See, he'll stay up against these confusions. And if you don't swamp him by knocking out certain stable data he has with a bunch of unknowns, he won't find out that he is changing his game very rapidly. You give him a tremendous number of unknowns, he tells you at once, I now have a new game. You see this? So if we swamp him, he now has a new game. That's to wreck you, or it's to do this or do that. It's to knock out these unknowns. All kinds of various computations can come in about this. The stable data, which the preclear has, is not the trouble with the preclear. That's the first thing you got to realize. It is his lack of stable data which prevents him from changing, because when he starts to back out of any particular sphere, area, or skull, he is liable to encounter a great number of unknowns he has not hitherto noticed. And this makes too good a new game. And he doesn't raise his ability because he doesn't change his agreements. It's not that he's afraid of anything, you understand. It's just that he says, you know, I don't know all about that. There's a bunch of stuff to know there. There's a bunch of confusions to handle. Here's a wonderful chance to be dramatic. And we'll go into this game. And so, if you're going to do anything for a Thetan, you've got to do it gently and without much dramatics. You see? And then he smoothly works up and assumes new sets of agreements, realigns his data to old data, gets his house in order, you might say, and comes out of it feeling very, very good. Now, there are certain definite feelings and concerns he has, but most of these concerns are based upon his own ideas of what is confusion and what is stupidity. I can see that you can tell this very easily. A fellow comes down from Alpha Centauri, which is doing space flight. The whole system there is having a wonderful time. It's an electronic society. It's gotten so good it's even solved its propensities for blowing itself up atomically. It's really advanced. A man can live with the machine. He's just getting along fine. And he comes down, and he happens to talk to the late Albert Einstein. And Einstein, who late in his career was saying that it was too bad, and he was sorry, and he hadn't had anything to do with the A-bomb, and who yet in his first letter on the subject to Franklin Delano Roosevelt told him in its second paragraph that he had something which could blow up whole cities and do other interesting military things. It was Einstein that proposed it, you see. A man then has some social confusions one way or the other. And this fellow from Alpha Centauri talks to the late Albert Einstein while he was still alive, and he goes away and he says, boy, he says, they really got some yokels around here. Man, I tell you. Oh, well, I'll probably meet a bright fellow here, one of these. There might be somebody bright in town, see. Tolerance for stupidity. See, he takes a look at the brightest brain that the physical sciences have produced in this generation, and he says, that's stupid. You get the idea? Some little dog comes romping down the street, and he can't get a ball out from underneath a push cart, and his little master pushes the push cart out of the road and gives him the ball, and the dog says, boy, is he smart. Most brilliant genius Earth has produced. Get the idea? Here's differences of attitudes toward what is intelligence and what is stupidity. And the only thing we can argue with or talk about is what is the mean average? You know, what is the mean? What do most people think is stupid? What do most people think is intelligent? All right, now right along with that, since it's a problem which is of the same order of magnitude, it's merely a different mechanic and statement of the same thing, take confusion. Now, one fellow comes along and sees the two newspapers, another fellow comes along and sees the 50, and you've got different attitudes between the two about a confusion. What is a confusion? How confused is a confusion? How stupid is a stupidity? How confused is a confusion? Now, Thetan has to be able to answer those questions to some degree, but more important than that, he has to settle with himself his own tolerance of these two things. If he increases his tolerance of confusion, he then, of course, can give up certain bodies and areas and let them spin without having to inject into them new stable data at every hand. If his tolerance of stupidity is increased, then he himself won't be forcing his body and everything else around him to get bright at the pistol point. He doesn't, on the eighth dynamic, have to build an altar in the temple. And he doesn't have to convince this fellow. He doesn't get out of patience because his tolerance for the other fellow's stupidity is not so poor that he has to immediately convince the other fellow. See that? He can let the other fellow find out, if the fellow's going to find out at all. And the oddity is that only that attitude will bring about a smart society, smart children, or anything else. It's not telling them how stupid they are. The only thing that you can do is to offer them the information which is acceptable to them, and let them buy it or not buy it, as the case may be, but let them buy as much of it as they will buy, or gently bringing them into an understanding that something can be done about livingness, change smoothly, pleasantly, with good ARC, their tolerances for confusion and stupidity. And if you do these things smoothly, you'll have awful bright people. You'll have very bright people, and everything will be swinging along very nicely. But if you do with force and duress, if you crush in, if you convince them, if you press upon them new data which unstabilize their old stable data, they'll simply go into such confusions and so on that they'll have to unmock something, and most usually it's you. The handling of a preclear is better understood, of course, if you understand that there are two subjects here, the subject of the material, mechanical, stimulus-response pictures, and there's this other subject of the Thetan who is looking at and making the pictures. And these two subjects are quite interesting. They are quite differently handled, and different processes really are addressed to them, but the end product is the same. An individual is able to live with less liability and with greater happiness. Thank you.